We've been here in South Carolina all week reporting on the Democratic primary held yesterday, but we also spent some time focusing on other issues, including conditions in the state's prisons. This after the deadly riots almost 2 years ago at the Lee Correctional Institution in Bishopville, where 7 inmates died and more than 20 were injured. It's been called one of the deadliest prison riots in recent history. As is usually the case, the riots brought long-ignored problems to the surface, such as ancient infrastructure. Cells have to be unlocked with giant keys instead of electronically. Salaries were low and turnover was high. And programs to help people make it after prison were few to none. Brian Sterling heads the Department of Corrections, and he's put forth a budget proposal of nearly $140 million. The proposal, if approved by the state's General Assembly, would allocate millions to make physical improvements, improve salaries for workers, and conditions for inmates. We wanted to get a sense of what life is like inside one of the state's prisons, so we visited the Manning Reentry and Work Release Center. It's a reentry facility, which means it's a place where prisoners spend the last 6 months of their sentences. There we met Nina Walker Staley. She is the former warden of this prison, and she currently works on programming for the Corrections Department overall. She led us into a long, wide hallway.
What we're going into is the tunnel, and the tunnel area is, school is right here, so they go to their educational courses here. We have our chaplain's office right here. Through this area is also our chapel where they have church. And then you have medical in this area, cafeteria, canteen. So all of the major services that they need are right here in the tunnel.
Along one side, three prisoners were sitting against a wall. The Department of Corrections had asked them to share their stories. The first was Christopher. We're only using his first name under a policy set by the department.
I have my reading and social studies to do, and I'll be able to get my GED. And also, I'm not homeless, but I'm looking to go towards a transitional house because I'm trying to do it on my own. I'm trying to start over and do it myself, so I won't have to depend on my mother or anybody out there. So I won't be a burden.
Do you mind if I ask, how long have you been locked up?
I've been locked up since 03.
03?
Yes, ma'am. It's roughly 17 years.
And do you feel like you're in a different place now?
I am.
With yourself? What do you think made the biggest difference?
You know, when you've seen stabbings and, you know, people overdosing and stuff like that, it really has makes you look at life differently. Like, you really want something out of it. I don't have any kids, so that's one thing. I want to start my own family.
Right. I also met another prisoner, Dwayne. I asked him how he ended up in prison.
I was active duty military, and I deal with severe post-traumatic stress. So one of the main things was that I was too prideful to get assistance and get the help that I needed. But the good thing is that doors have opened for me since I've been here, and I'm thankful for that opportunity. My mindset has changed. I received the help that I've needed through
some crisis. Like, what kind of help has made a difference for you?
For me, I was at a prior yard. Being around other veterans that have been through similar situations, being able to talk to them, being able to open up about what happened to me while I was in Afghanistan has definitely helped me.
And then Philip, who was addicted to opiates. He told us the prison's rehab program had helped him a lot.
You know, in college, I went to school, did a lot of partying, so I selected to do drugs and escalated to different drugs and that ended up being my drug of choice. You know, I went through a marriage, a divorce, a custody battle where, you know, I tried to hide my drugs, and you know, I was a functional drug addict. I'd still be able to go out there and get my work done, but still staying high all the time.
Right.
You know, I've learned through some of these classes how those drugs changed the way I thought.
I was going to ask, what do you think made the biggest difference for you, helping you figure out you might be able to have a different life?
I'd say knowledge and learning the consequences, not only on me, but on my loved ones.
Can I just ask each of you, though, do you feel like people who are on the outside care about you? You do? Do you mean personally, family, or is it more like the society, right, for want of a better word? Do you feel like anybody, because prisons are hard to get into, right? Do you feel that people on the outside care about what goes on here?
I do feel that people on the outside care about what goes on here to a certain extent. Unfortunately, people don't really care about it until they see something happen, such as the situation with Lee County a few years ago.
Oh, you mean the riots?
Exactly, the riots where multiple inmates were killed in the process. In a sense, SCDC has failed the system. the system is failing.
Did you know about that? You heard about that?
Yes, I was.
Everybody heard about it?
Yeah.
How did you hear about it? Was it on the news, or how did you know about it?
News passes fast.
Okay. You have your own information mechanisms.
Exactly.
You were on lockdown for months.
Really? Yeah. You were in lockdown for months? Really? Months? Wow.
6 months where I was at.
6 months you're in lockdown? Yeah. You were in lockdown for a year? What does that mean? You can't leave except to eat or whatever?
Take a shower. Take a shower once a week.
Shower once a week?
That's it.
I also spoke with Director Brian Sterling, who served in the role since 2013. He says one big factor in the riots was the outdated lock system in the prisons. He says in more restrictive facilities, guards could spend 85% of their time just unlocking doors.
It took 47 minutes to lock and unlock each door, or just to unlock, to let the folks out. And they have to do that several times a shift. So that does not allow them to, frankly, kind of watch and make sure they're doing what they should be doing.
I asked him what he thought was the cause of the riot.
The cell phones and contraband. There's a fight over contraband.
It was a fight over contraband?
Yeah.
And what was the contraband? Was it what?
I mean, you name it. It could be cell phones. It could be drugs, tobacco.
What was the fight about? Is it that what was the fight about? Was it
someone went and stole
control?
Someone's contraband. And then someone hurt someone, and then it escalated. And then they were able to let other people know, in other dorms via cell phones, hey, there's something going on here. It's gang turf war stuff.
And what is a gang here? I mean, what does a gang mean here?
I think people join gangs when they come to prison for protection. I think the gangs come and greet you and say, we're going to come and protect you. You join the gang. We actually have a former gang leader from Massachusetts named Andre Norman, who is doing a program at Lee, and he's working with some of our more challenging folks that are incarcerated. And what he tells me and what he tells everyone is that that's what happens. When you show up, they say either you're with them or you're with us.
He's talking about the Academy of Hope, a program at Lee Correctional Institution where the riot took place. They started the program to address gang violence in the prison. The proposed budget asks for similar programs in the state's most high-security facilities. And then there's the issue of education. Manning Prison is part of the Palmetto Unified School District. They offer GED classes and certificates in vocational training. I asked him how he defends such programs to critics, such as free education for prisoners, when others on the outside would have to pay. He says this issue comes up even in conversation with friends.
I said, I'll give you a choice. You can have someone that has been locked down 24 hours a day, 23 hours a day, no programs, probably 25% of having a mental health issue, doesn't have a connection with family, doesn't have any money, has nowhere to go when they leave. Who do you want sitting next to your grandmother or your daughter? And he said, I never thought of it that way. I said, that's how we need to think of it.
We then went to another room that houses the prison laundry as well as equipment for forklift training and other programs. And we talked about their plans for job training and getting people who've served their time back on their feet.
And we watched what they're doing with the economy. So we decided that if they're going to be putting all this money into roads, there's going to be a lot of jobs, and people are likely to get hired for those jobs. So what we did was we bought paving equipment, and we train them, and they get certified, they get their on-the-job training credits, and paving companies can come and hire them almost immediately.
Then we walked into a giant clothing closet. There were racks and racks of shoes, suits, pants, and shirts. Nina Walker-Staley said this is an important part of getting prisoners back on their feet.
I had one guy, I think he'd been in for almost 30 something years. When he came in, he was a young fella. He had never had on a suit and tie ever in life. And so he said, I want a suit and a tie. And he said he had a grandchild at this point, because he had a child when he came to prison. And he said, I want my grandchild to see me for the first time in a suit. So when he put his suit on, he about melted.
That was Nina Walker-Staley, Deputy Director of Programs for South Carolina's Department of Corrections. We also heard from the department's director, Brian Sterling, and we also heard from inmates Christopher, Dwayne, and Philip.